Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Nancy Regan to the podcast. Welcome, Nancy.
Hi, James. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Now, for those that may not be familiar with you, you have a long established history of RCM in a variety of different applications and industries. So you graduated with a degree in aerospace engineering. You worked for the U.S. Navy as a civilian employee and instituted the RCM program on Naval Aviation Common Support Equipment. In 2001, you founded The Force, and you have over 20 years of experience in facilitating RCM analysis, conducting RCM training, and assisting clients in implementing those RCM programs. Amongst many of the projects, you facilitated the CH-47 Chinook helicopter, implementing the RCM and determining the maintenance strategy for that. You're also the author of The RCM Solution, a practical guide to starting and maintaining a successful RCM program. And most recently, you founded the website rcmtrainingonline.com and also have become quite popular with your RCM videos on LinkedIn. In your brief...
Thank you.
In your brief background that I provided, what did I miss, or is there anything you want to fill in there?
No, I mean, that about does it. I started my technical love affair with reliability-centered maintenance about 21 years ago, and it all started one day when I was a civilian employee with the Navy, and I was kind of bored with what I was doing, and one day my supervisor, Fred, called me into his office, and he said, "We've been tasked from above to reduce maintenance costs on aircraft launch and recovery equipment found on aircraft carriers." And he said, "We've been tasked to do reliability-centered maintenance, so go figure that out." Now, in that moment, I had no idea what RCM was all about. But Providence stepped in, and John Mowbray became my mentor, and the rest is history. So it's really interesting. When I woke up that day, I had no idea that something as simple as a meeting with my supervisor would change, quite literally, the trajectory of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And to have a mentor such as John, the author of RCM2, must have been a great, great opportunity to learn more about RCM, why it's how to make it successful, and all the different intricacies involved with RCM.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I learned so much about RCM from John, but he was very generous with his knowledge. He taught me a lot about business and a lot about life also. I still carry what he taught me, you know, pretty much every day, lessons that I implement in my life.
Excellent. And then most recently, you founded rcmtrainingonline.com. What is that?
I did. Okay, so I'm super excited about this. You know, RCM principles have been around for nearly 50 years now, the RCM process specifically for nearly 40 years. But I find that a lot of people still don't understand what RCM is all about, and it is also widely misunderstood, I think. And I think one of those reasons is that RCM training is not super readily accessible. So what I've done is I have created an online training course. It's an introductory course on reliability-centered maintenance, so you never even have to leave your home or office to explore all of the amazing principles of such a process such as reliability-centered maintenance.
Excellent. Now, for those that may have heard the term RCM or reliability-centered maintenance, what is that?
Okay, so in a nutshell, RCM is a process that we use to make a proactive maintenance plan. So it gives us very powerful tools to figure out if we should be doing a scheduled replacement task, a scheduled restoration task, or even a condition-based maintenance task. Now, a misconception of the process is sometimes, hey, I don't know whether I should do CBM or RCM, But actually, CBM is part of that process. But in addition to proactive maintenance, some failure modes that we might identify can't be managed with proactive maintenance. So in the seventh step of the RCM process, it gives us the opportunity to identify if maybe, for example, we need to change part of a training procedure, or maybe we need a redesign to the equipment.
Excellent. So RCM is not just looking at what type of scheduled restoration, scheduled replacement, or on-condition tasks. It's also looking at potential redesigns, material changes, procedure changes to drive reliability into the process, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And if I may, one of the most important things my mentor, John Mowbray, taught me is this, and it's kind of like a really neat mindset change. You know, the first step in the RCM process is when we write functions. And I think oftentimes that feels like it's just kind of like another thing we have to do. But John taught me that reliability isn't a subject on its own, but rather reliability pervades all of the functions of a piece of equipment. So when you start the first step in the RCM process, what you're doing is you're identifying for yourself and your organization exactly what you need and what you want from that equipment. In other words, you're defining reliability. So the rest of the process is about figuring out what you have to do to achieve that kind of reliability that you want.
That's very interesting.
So yes, it's not just about maintenance.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned that. One of the things I found and I continue to hear over and over is the learning portion of RCM. People understand what the asset is supposed to do. What are the specific functions? What are the secondary functions? How does this equipment actually operate? And they learn a lot of that going through the RCM analysis. So that's just another benefit that you see with RCM.
Yes, that's an amazing benefit. I mean, I've worked with a lot of clients over the last two decades, and it doesn't matter if I've had an equipment expert who's been in the field for 30 years. They undoubtedly learn something new about the equipment in the process. And a lot of times we figure out the cause of chronic failure, and it has nothing to do with maintenance, but it's because you get all of the equipment in the room, all the experts in a room together, talking about this piece of equipment, and then we figure out, for example, maybe just something as simple as something's been operated improperly, and it comes to light in that kind of a forum.
Absolutely. Now, I think we've touched on it, but I want to ask the question, why is RCM the preferred approach to establishing that proactive maintenance plan?
Okay, I have a very simple answer to that. First and foremost, reliability-centered maintenance is common sense applied to physical assets. Now, we've already talked about the first step where we define our reliability. But from there, we use the remaining six steps to help us figure out what kind of maintenance or other actions we need. But see, the thing about RCM is when it comes to proactive maintenance, for example, you only assign a task if it's technically the right thing to do and if it's worth it. Because sometimes it may be more cost effective to let something run to failure on or not. So it gives us those tools to do that. Now, you know, there's a reason why these principles have been around for nearly 50 years. It's because they work. And the reason they work is because it's just common sense. And the basics of maintenance and reliability pervade the entire RCM process. Things like, I think we might get into talking a little bit more about it, but failure modes and effects analysis, failure modes, effects, and criticality analysis, all those basics of maintenance and reliability are embedded in the RCM process.
Yes, they are. And that was actually one of my next questions for you is, what are the advantages to using RCM over a standard FMEA or FMEA?
Okay. Yes, and this is something else that John Mowbray taught me. And this is one of the misconceptions of the RCM process is I often get asked the question, you know, should I do FMEA or FMEA or should I do RCM? But the first four steps in the RCM process, functions, functional failures, failure modes, and failure effects, make up your FMEA or your failure modes and effects analysis. You add step five, which is consequences to that. That's steps one through five, and that makes up your FMEA or your failure modes, effects, and criticality analysis. So when you do RCM, the requirement for a FMEA and a FMEA is largely satisfied. Now, when I asked John Mowbray, well, why would someone just do FMEA? And I said, you know, what comes next? And he just looked at me and said, exactly. Because once you do a failure modes and effects analysis, you know, you do that to gain information so that you can make decisions. Well, that's what steps six and seven of the RCM process are all about. That's the decision making. So really, I think that when a lot of people do FMEA, they're pretty much doing steps six and seven. They maybe just don't realize it.
Yeah, and they may not be using that logic or decision tree or logic tree, if you will, to decide should they be doing scheduled restoration, scheduled replacement, failure finding or on condition tasks or the other tasks, if you will. So they just may be doing that in their head, but not following that rule-based approach as laid out in RCM, correct?
Right. Yes, exactly.
Now, for all the advantages and rigor that RCM brings, you often hear some disadvantages to RCM. In your opinion, are there any disadvantages? And if so, what are they?
Okay, I think that the biggest disadvantage to using RCM is when an organization doesn't apply it properly. You know, RCM, I often hear it gets a bad rap. Like some people say it takes too long to do or it's too complex. But that's just not true when you do it the right way. So, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's any disadvantage to doing RCM when you do it right. You know, there are other processes, things like maintenance task analysis or preventive maintenance optimization. And generally speaking, those processes, what you do is you take your current maintenance plan and you reverse engineer failure modes. And then you decide if maybe you should do a different task in its place or eliminate it or maybe just change the task frequency. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with those processes as long as you go into it acknowledging that all you're going to be doing is sanity checking those failure modes associated with your current maintenance. So there could be other failure modes that could be contributing, for example, to chronic failure or increased costs that you wouldn't get at if you do some of these shortened processes. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of valid processes out there. You just have to figure out which one is, you know, right for you and for your organization. But generally speaking, I would say there's definitely no disadvantage as long as you do it right.
And I think that's key. Doing it right is important. Once you do the analysis, you actually have to implement the findings or the disadvantages. You got no benefits from it. Oftentimes I've worked with organizations who would have done an RCM analysis and it sits on the shelf, never to be implemented. Maintenance tasks, not to be redesigned, not to be redeployed or anything like that. And I think that is the disadvantage, is not actually implementing it. Now,
oh, yes.
Now, are there any key rules to keep in mind when someone is performing an RCM analysis? Something that, you know, they need to keep top of mind, do they go too deep, not deep enough, or is there anything like that that you want to discuss when performing that RCM analysis?
Oh, yes. Okay. So, all right. My number one biggest rule to keep in mind is to make sure that you're properly trained. Now, I know when you introduced me, you know, I've got an online training course and, you know, I've made my career training people in this process, but it's because from the bottom of my technical heart, I know this to be true, that before you do it, before you do reliability-centered maintenance, you have to make sure that you're properly trained in it. It's just like, you know, any one of us could play a piano. But, you know, right now I wouldn't be able to sit down and play it. But if I took a few lessons, I'd be able to do it. So it's pretty much the same thing. Now, one of the misconceptions of the process is that it takes too long and it's way too complex. Well, in my opinion, what I've seen is that when people don't identify their failure modes at the right level, in other words, they go way too deep, you know, they get into nitty-gritty components and start writing all these failure modes. You oftentimes, if your goal, for example, is to make proactive maintenance, you usually don't have to go into that much detail. And I have maybe later at the end, James, I can give a link to your listeners. I've made a training video that describes this in detail, how you decide how detailed to write your failure mode. So if your listeners are interested in that, I can give you that URL, and it's actually a unit from the training course, but it'll explain it in detail how to write those failure modes.
And I think that is vitally important. As you mentioned, the level of detail that goes into the failure modes, what components. I've seen different RCM analysis that are, they're writing failure modes for an individual bolt and as part of a subassembly. And while, yes, that bolt does have a function and it does have failure modes, is that really realistic to the level of issues that we see within that piece of equipment? Is it that realistic to write failure modes and a maintenance plan to that level of detail? Most instances, it is not, but some people don't have that level of detail. They go to that level of detail or they don't go deep enough. So I think that resource, and we'll provide a link to it in the show notes, may help answer that question and help streamline and eliminate some of these misbeliefs about RCM.
Yes, definitely.
Now, what are the steps to performing RCM? You mentioned steps 1 through 7, but I want to make sure we highlight what are those specific steps exactly that a typical RCM approach would take.
Okay, sure, definitely. So step 1, we identify functions. And when we do that, we don't write our functions the way a design engineer envisioned this machine working. We write our functions for what we and our organization needed to do. And this is one of the beautiful parts of RCM, because like I said, here's where you get your chance to identify what you mean by reliability. Then step 2, we write functional failures. We write total failure and partial failures. And then in step 3, we write failure modes. Now, I use the term failure mode and failure cause interchangeably. So basically, we figure out what would cause us not to be able to do all of those functions that we identified. From there, we identify a failure effect for each failure mode that we've written. Now, a failure effect is like a little story of what would happen if we did nothing to predict, prevent, or manage the failure mode. Now, by doing that, we carry out what's called a zero-based analysis. So we write the failure effect as if we're not doing any kind of current maintenance or we're not doing any kinds of inspections, but that allows us to properly do step 5, which is to identify failure consequences, safety, environmental, operational, or non-operational. And then we do step 6, where we identify if there's any kind of proactive maintenance, scheduled restorations, scheduled replacements, or on-condition or condition-based maintenance tasks. And then step 7, with default strategies, like, for example, a physical redesign to the equipment, or failure finding tasks where we go in and every so often blow smoke at the smoke detector and make sure that it would be available to us when we need it. So by doing that zero-based approach, what that lets you do is, in the case of legacy equipment, it lets you sanity check what you're doing now so you're not biased by your own tasks or your own decisions that you've already made. So those are steps 1 through 7.
Excellent. And that zero-based story that you mentioned, I think that's a great approach, because there is a lot of preconceived conceptions and notions and baggage that come in with people that already have an existing PM program. So I really like how that is a sanity check for their current system and a way to eliminate some of that baggage and those preconceived notions.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Now, one of the things you mentioned was consequences. You mentioned environmental, health and safety, operational, non-operational. What are those consequences? And also, I heard of another one called hidden. Can you explain what each one of those are and why we need to know that as part of the RCM analysis?
Yes. Okay. So that's super important. So when we do reliability-centered maintenance, we have a decision diagram that we take each failure mode through. And when we do that, we identify if a failure mode is evident or if it's hidden. So just like, for example, if we say, you know, the oil and, you know, our air filter, it clogs, well, in our vehicle, well, obviously that's going to become evident to us under normal circumstances. We're going to know that. But let's just take a very simple example, and let's take the smoke detector in our home. Let's say the battery was completely discharged. Well, would loss of function caused by that single failure mode become evident to me as the homeowner under normal circumstances? Well, the answer would be no, because normally I don't have a fire in my house. It would only become evident to me if there was a fire, and then the fire detector doesn't go off. So the reason that is so important to highlight whether something is evident or hidden is that almost always a hidden function or hidden failure mode has to do with protective devices. And protective devices are devices and systems that are meant to keep us safe when something else goes wrong. So we have to handle them in a very special way in the context of reliability-centered maintenance. And oftentimes we end up doing some sort of a failure-finding calculation where we take a few different variables and we put it through a calculation, and that will help us to identify how often we should be checking these systems. You know, how often we should be checking our pressure safety valves and our fire suppression systems, etc. So that's why it's so important that we distinguish between evident and hidden.
Excellent. Very good. Generally, when I refer to hidden, it is those things that are not, you know, noticeable to the operating crew under normal circumstances. A high switch or an overfill switch, for example, in a tank. Normally, you don't notice that. You don't realize it's not working until it's too late and you've flooded the tank and flooded your tank room, if you will. Those types of things. And it's excellent that you touched on that, because I think a lot of time those safety devices and those warning devices go under-maintained or not checked often enough. And as a result, that's when those catastrophic events occur.
Yes, exactly. You know, the things that will probably never happen, happen every day in our world. So it's super important to make sure we keep ourselves as safe as we can be.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you mentioned making sure people had the right training before they dive into RCM. But what prior knowledge is required to make RCM, to make sure the RCM analysis is performed properly? Do they have to go through an 8-week training course? Do they need a 4-hour awareness? What do they need to actually make RCM work in their organization?
Okay, so my opinion about this is anybody who's going to participate in an RCM analysis, say if you're a working group member or you're going to be part of a team that's going to validate the results of a working group, they need to have an introductory course. So when I teach that course live, that usually takes about 2 days. And so, you know, so in an introductory course, you just get a really good feel for the process. Well enough so that you can participate in the RCM process. But I advocate a facilitated working group approach to the process. So when I do RCM, you've got a facilitator who's, you know, a highly trained specialist in RCM leading a team of equipment experts. So the people in the working group have to have an introductory course. And then a facilitator goes through, generally speaking, a 2-week training course, and then has a little bit of one-on-one live mentoring, you know, during the first 1, 2, or 3 analyses, just to make sure that the facilitator's got a good grasp of the concepts. So that's generally the training that's involved in the process.
Excellent. And I know you mentioned that facilitator piece, and in my experience, the facilitator is very important in the RCM process. They help guide the group to what level of detail do we need to go to, where can we get a little bit higher in the level of detail, and generally keeps the group on track. And while it's not their job to help decide, you know, where we need to go, what those failure modes are, they can help steer the group to make sure it's moving at a good pace and we don't lose buy-in and support of the project. Do you find that as well?
Yes, that is 100% the job of the facilitator. And again, you know, it all goes back to, you know, people incorrectly thinking ASEAN takes too long, it's too complex. Those things come into play when you have people who aren't properly trained, you know, leading a team or doing an analysis. So yes, 100%.
Excellent. Now, are there any other thoughts on RCM that we didn't cover that you want to share with the listeners?
You know, I think that generally speaking, I would say that I would like to just reiterate that RCM is common sense applied to physical assets. And if you even just want to know about or explore or learn the basics of maintenance and reliability, I mean, you just have to turn to reliability-centered maintenance for that. You know, in our technology-driven world, I think that a lot of people think that fancy software and sophisticated monitoring devices, you know, can come in and solve all of our problems. And all of those things can help. I mean, we absolutely need software, and we absolutely, you know, these sophisticated monitoring devices have their place. But what I see happening is people have shiny object syndrome, and they run to those things first without considering the basics. When you consider the basics, then you can figure out what kind of condition monitoring equipment you might need or what kind of software you want. So really, software and expensive equipment still doesn't replace the common sense and the basics when it comes to maintenance and reliability. So that would be one of my biggest takeaways from this podcast for your listeners.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If you don't understand the physics of failure, the failure mode, is it a wear out type failure, or is it a infant mortality type failure, or is it a random failure? If you don't understand those, how are you going to select the right maintenance activity to address that potential risk? If you don't understand the physics of failure, are we doing the right maintenance to detect it further out on the PF curve? Those are all things that I think are often overlooked, especially with the wide availability of, as you mentioned, software, different condition monitoring technologies, and so on and so forth. But I also think that's part of the reason why some of those are not successful. I've been to many organizations that have condition monitoring tools and equipment sitting on shelves that haven't been used in 5 years because they never generated any investment or return on investment. It was a waste of time because they weren't driving towards that unique failure mode, understanding that physics of failure, and all those other pieces that are required to make a successful program work.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
Now, based on your experience with implementing RCM and all these organizations, what do you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with it?
Okay, the biggest difference in being successful with it is actually implementing the results. And, you know, I've known some people who've done fantastic RCM analyses, but they sit on the shelf, like you mentioned when we first started. So you really need to make sure you get buy-in from management. And when I use the term management, I'm talking about, you know, the people who maybe hold the purse strings or have the authority to implement those results. It's important to bring them into the process from the beginning and not wait until the end, because then it's kind of like maybe they're feeling left out, or they don't really understand what it was all about. So if you pull them in from the beginning and get their buy-in from the beginning, that could make a big difference in successful implementation of the results.
Excellent. I love that. Implementing the results. Even if you have a bunch of redesigns and you don't get all the funding you wish to do those redesigns, you still have all those new maintenance actions you can implement, those new PM routines, the new predictive routines, the new failure finding or scheduled restorations tasks. Those are all things you can implement even without some of that redesign money to get benefits of it, get the benefits of RCM.
Yes, exactly.
Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in a typical RCM analysis or implementation?
Okay, James, I love this question. So with my magic wand, I would instantly have upper management all over the world understand the value of maintenance and reliability. And then I would have them instantly understand that it does affect their bottom line and that operating in a reactive maintenance environment is no way to live. That's what I would do with my magic wand.
That is great, because not only does that directly impact the ability to do RCM analysis, implement RCM actions, but it also helps with all the other parts that go along with a maintenance reliability program. Spares management, PM optimization, planning scheduling, building a proper asset hierarchy in the CMMS, as simple as it sounds. We would get support for a lot of that to make those things proper so we can actually perform maintenance reliability the way it should be.
Yes.
Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today?
Okay, here's what I would like. If there's anyone out there who's heard negative things about RCM, or if you don't know what RCM is all about, I would say take the time to explore RCM's principles for yourself and make your own opinion about the process. You know, I've worked with so many clients who've realized amazing results. But at the end of the day, no matter what we do as human beings, we have to make sure that it's right for us. So I would say that definitely explore its principles and understand for yourself that really it's just common sense applied to physical assets.
Perfect. And where should they explore that? Is it RCM2 by John Mowbray? Is it the RCM solution by you? Where do they go to look for those principles and begin to understand that?
Okay, well, I mean, I'm biased, of course, but I would love for your listeners to visit my website, and that is rcmtrainingonline.com. And if any of your listeners would like to have a copy of the free video that explains one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and that's writing those failure modes at way too low a level, you can just go to RCM, that's my Boston accent sneaking in there, rcmtrainingonline.com/explore. And you can just put your details in there and I'll give you access to that video.
Excellent. Perfect. We'll make sure to include a link to that in the show notes, plus a link to your book, John Mowbray's book, RCM2, as well. So they have a wide range of options to explore those principles. Now, Nancy, where can people find out more about you? What events or activities are you going to be at presenting? When can we expect the next RCM video? You know, what else is going on with you at the moment?
Oh, well, okay. Once or twice a week, I post new videos on LinkedIn. So you can just find me on LinkedIn, and my name there is Nancy Regan, REGAM RCM. So you can find me on LinkedIn. But I have several conferences that I'll be speaking at here soon. I'll be presenting at Euro Maintenance in Belgium in September, and the SMRP conference, the Middle East Maintenance Conference in Bahrain in November, and at IMC 2018 in Bonita Springs in December. So I'm really looking forward to presenting at those, and I would love to see your listeners there.
Excellent. And it'll be a great chance for us to catch up again at the SMRP annual conference. I have a workshop scheduled there, I believe, on the last day. So another great opportunity to catch up, network with great people such as yourself, learn more about RCM. Now, you mentioned the resource rcmtrainingonline.com/explore. Are there any other resources you want to share with our listeners about RCM or maintenance reliability in general?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, Nolan and Heap's original report on reliability-centered maintenance, that was published in 1978. You can just Google that. It's in the public domain. So your listeners could Google it. And it's Nowlan, Nolan and Heap, H-E-A-P. And you can just put Nolan and Heap RCM in Google and it'll come up. You know, it's just really interesting to, you know, browse through that old report. But another resource that I'd like to mention that has nothing really to do with maintenance and reliability is any book by Napoleon Hill. And the reason I love Napoleon Hill's books is because he sets forth the idea that if there's anything you want to achieve in life, whether it's professional or personal, it all starts in your own mind with your own thoughts. And I know that there are a lot of people out there working in organizations where they've got a steep hill to climb with maybe trying to convince, you know, management to, whether it's do RCM or any other improvement process. I know that it's not always easy, but it always starts at least with one person. So I would like to say to your listeners, if you have the desire, if you have that kind of sense like, you know what, I've really got to dig in and do something here, I would say just run with it, because that's like the universe giving you a little clue that you're on the right track. So any book by Napoleon Hill, I would definitely recommend, and definitely go for your maintenance and reliability goals, because anything is possible. It's not always easy, but it's definitely possible.
Yes, absolutely. Napoleon Hill has some great books out there. And like you said, the only way you're going to actually get to achieving those maintenance reliability goals is trying to start now, moving forward with it, and trying to implement those things. If you never try, you're never going to get there. So excellent resources. Now, Nancy, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge on RCM with our listeners tonight. I certainly learned more, as I always do, from our great guests, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk about RCM with us today.
Oh, James, it was entirely my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity. And I'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yes, thank you very much.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.